people who are clinically tone-deaf get earworms at the same rate as everyone else. Not slightly less. Not with different songs. The same rate, at roughly the same frequency, lasting roughly the same duration. Barbara Tillman and colleagues found this in 2023, and it reshapes the entire question. We usually ask, why does music get stuck? But people with congenital amusia, a condition that impairs pitch and melodic memory, still get earworms at the same rate. That means music isn't really the thing that's happening. The brain is running a loop. Music just happens to fill it most often. Today we're going through what earworms actually are, what makes certain songs more likely to get stuck, and what the research says you can do about it. Start with how common this is. Around 90% of people report experiencing involuntary musical imagery, or INMI, at least once a week. Most people find it neutral to mildly pleasant. The distressing version, a song you hate that won't quit, is the tail of the distribution, not the center. I mention this because the clinical framing around earworms tends toward pathology, and that skews the picture. This isn't a disorder. It's something close to a default feature of human cognition. The link to obsessive-compulsive disorder, or OCD, has circulated in earworm research for years. People with higher OCD traits report more frequent and more bothersome earworms, and a 2024 study by Killingly and colleagues confirmed that. So earworms and OCD, linked, right? Not so fast. A 2025 paper by Dodds, published in Consciousness and Cognition, complicates the picture. Dodds tested what earworm frequency actually correlates with across a broader trait inventory. The answer wasn't specifically OCD. It was a cluster of 22 unrelated repetitive behaviors: foot tapping, counting, lip syncing, humming, head bobbing. The OCD link looks like a proxy for something more general, which is a tendency toward automatic, habitual loops of any kind. Earworms may be what happens when the brain's habit system fires in the auditory domain. The Dodds paper is one correlational study and needs replication. But the framing is more coherent than the OCD-specific story, and the amusia finding backs it up from a completely different direction. So what makes a particular song more likely to get stuck? Karen Jakubowski and colleagues collected earworm nominations from thousands of participants in the UK in 2017, then compared the melodic features of those songs against non-earworm hits matched for chart popularity and recency. Two things distinguished earworms. First, faster tempo. Earworm songs were consistently faster than matched non-earworms, even controlling for genre. Second, a structural paradox. Earworm melodies tend to have common global contours, the simple rise and fall arc the brain can predict, combined with unusual local intervals, specific leaps or repeated notes the ear doesn't fully resolve. The prediction machinery locks on because the shape is familiar, then gets snagged on a detail it can't anticipate. Think moves like Jagger, Bad Romance, Don't Stop Believing, Can't Get You Out of My Head. That last title is almost too on the nose. All of them have a familiar arc punctuated by something unexpected. This doesn't contradict your intuitions about catchy songs. It formalizes them. There's a real caveat, though, which I want to name. Every song in Jakubowska's study was a top 40 hit. Separating structurally sticky from you've heard this 300 times is genuinely hard when your entire sample is chart music. The structure probably matters independently of exposure. How much is less certain? The finding that surprised me most is also the least robustly sourced, so I'll put both facts up front. A 2022 study out of UC Davis paired novel music loops with short films, then tested how well participants recalled the footage later. People who subsequently experienced the music as an earworm recalled significantly more detail from the associated footage than those who didn't. The proposed mechanism is that involuntary musical imagery acts as covert rehearsal of an encoded memory. The earworm keeps replaying a tag attached to an episode, strengthening the associative memory trace during post-encoding consolidation. It's functionally analogous to what the brain does during sleep, where memory reactivation strengthens what was learned that day, except here it's happening while you're awake and mildly annoyed. This inverts the usual framing. Earworms aren't cognitive waste. They might be memory doing its job slightly too loudly. But this is a single study from one lab using a specific paradigm, and the source I found was a neuroscience news summary rather than the primary paper. It needs replication. Hold it loosely. One open question this raises is whether earworms persist during sleep. There are case reports of songs surviving sleep onset and appearing in dreams, but no systematic research exists. If earworms are a consolidation mechanism, nighttime INMI would be worth measuring. Nobody's done it yet. Now, practically, if you want to get an earworm out, two things have decent evidence. One is chewing gum. Researchers at the University of Reading ran 98 participants through earworm induction, then had half of them chew gum while trying to suppress the song. The chewing group reported roughly 30% fewer intrusions. The mechanism is that chewing occupies the motor system that drives silent speech, the part of the brain that rehearses sounds in your head. You can't silently sub-vocalize a melody when your jaw is already busy. That's a plausible mechanistic account, not folk wisdom. The caveat is that 98 people in one study is a small sample, and the effect hasn't been widely replicated. Treat the number as directional, not precise. The other thing that works is the counterintuitive one. Listen to the full song rather than avoiding it. Trying not to think about an earworm works about as well as Daniel Wegener's classic, Don't Think About a White Bear Experiment from 1987, which is to say, it doesn't. Monitoring for the thought requires keeping a representation of it active. Completing the song closes the open loop and removes the brain's reason to keep running it. This is Wegener's ironic process theory applied to music, and the earworm confirmation isn't surprising to anyone familiar with that literature. But it's practically useful, so worth knowing. A bigger pattern here is that earworms are a window into how the brain runs automatic processes in general. The habit system framing, the amusia result, the memory consolidation hypothesis, they're all pointing in the same direction. The brain runs loops. It recruits whatever scaffolding is available, pitch if you have it, rhythm and lyrics if you don't. It runs them for reasons that might serve memory consolidation, and it does it whether you ask it to or not. Earworms aren't noise in the system. They're the system, more visible than usual. Worth stating plainly, not just as a footnote, nearly all this research comes from Western, English-speaking, pop music-saturated samples. The structural features that predict earworms in UK datasets might look very different in cultures with different musical traditions. That's a real limit on how broadly to generalize. There's also a roughly 30% of earworm onsets that appear spontaneous, with no clear environmental trigger. No related sound, no lyric word on a sign. Just suddenly there's a song. What's causing those? Default mode network activity? Internal emotional states? That's almost entirely uncharted, and it's probably where the most interesting mechanics live. You will have an earworm today, or tomorrow, or the day after. Now you know it's not a music problem. It's the habit system finding something to loop, and it found a good one. Chew some gum, or just let the song finish.